was just recently evacuated to Britain. But yes, I do feel like the tide is shifting. I think that, again, I think Rachel has been a really, really big part of that. And I genuinely mean this, because the narrative is beginning to change. New people are beginning to hear about what's happening. More voices are starting to speak on the subject. More celebrities are starting to see that joining this cause is not going to be detrimental to your reputation, but in fact, not speaking up on what's happening is what's most likely going to be detrimental on your reputation in the future and how our children and grandchildren see these celebrities. So yes, in short.
We have 30 seconds. Ms. Rachel, your final thoughts. You can share them with children around the world, with their parents, with humanity.
Well, quickly, I want to say that I'm so relieved that people are starting to talk about the starvation of this population. And I just want to honor the 18,000 children that have been killed, because it should have been so much. It should have been like these children mattered, and they're not just numbers. They're 18,000 precious children, and they were everyone's universe, as a Jewish text says. So they were somebody's whole world and somebody's whole universe. And I just want to say to the kids, hi, I'm so proud of you. You have great ideas and a brilliant mind and a wonderful heart, and you're so kind, and you're welcome, and I adore you.
Rachel Griffin Accurso, known as Ms. Rachel to millions.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Our KBOO Out Loud fall membership drive is coming. Tune in August 20th, where we'll bring you testimonials, anecdotes, facts, and more, all day long to celebrate National Radio Day. KBOO, made by people like you, for people like you.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Neocani Coast Art and Music Cultural Foundation, presenting Rockaway Beach Music Festival, an all-ages music and arts festival in Rockaway Beach on August 16th and 17th. The event will feature live music, local food, art exhibits, and local craft vendors. More info at rbmusicfest.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council members are openly critical of the Problem Solver Network.
The Portland Trailblazers appear to have a new owner.
And in international news, the Israeli Defense Force has killed more journalists in Gaza than in all other wars in the 20th and 21st centuries combined.
Good evening, this is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 13th, 2025. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Nina Mayfair. A meeting that few people knew about in Portland is making major decisions for the city. The Problem Solver Network, run by the Public Environment Management Office, also known as PEMO, is a department of Portland Solutions. The organization was started by former Mayor Ted Wheeler's administration during the pandemic, when Wheeler decided to address business owners' concerns about the appearance of Portland. In an effort to modernize quickly, Wheeler signed an emergency declaration to, quote, improve cleanup of the city. There are 30 meetings a month, or two meetings per month that are each hosted in 15 different sites and convened online. Though the, quote, problem solver meetings are technically open to the public, information about the meetings is very hard to find. The meetings are regularly attended by city staff. This means City Administrator Michael Jordan and other staff, along with business owners from around Portland, leaders of neighborhood associations, and frequently, Portland police. They have no agenda and take no minutes from the meetings. This month, these meetings were publicized when bike-friendly traffic diverters were being removed around the city. Outrage grew because Portland Bureau of Transportation is currently very underfunded in our city and state, and Portlanders argued that they did not have a say in how these dollars were allocated. Reportedly, it was the Problem Solver Network that made this decision for all Portlanders. Skyer Broker Knapp, the director of Portland Solutions, says that the decision was mostly spurred by police request. Broker Knapp says that PPB had concerns about how difficult the traffic diverters are to navigate when the police are intervening in crime, and there were also complaints about, quote, chronic nuisance behavior around these diverters. PBOT was asked to convert the one-way streets to two-way vehicle traffic patterns. Some Portland City Councilors, including Sam Canal and Mitch Green, are openly critical of the Problem Solver Network. Councilor Canal said at the August 12th Bicycle Advisory Committee meeting, quote, if public involvement principles were followed here, then they have to change. We've seen a lot of examples where regular people have to go through process after process to get a small piece of community. And then an entrenched interest comes along, and boom. I hope we can take that apart throughout the entire city. End quote. The story is informed by reporting from Portland Mercury.
The Portland Trailblazers have a new owner, and the team will reportedly be staying in the Rose City. Sources close to the Oregonian newspaper report that Paul Allen's estate agreed to sell the team to Carolina Hurricanes owner and Dallas businessman Tom Dundon. Dundon will share a local minority ownership with Collective Global Management CEO Shield Tile. Columbia Sportswear's Tim Boyle is also reportedly interested in purchasing a stake in the team. A negotiated sale price was not disclosed, but ESPN reported it to be $4.25 billion. This would rank among the highest sales of an NBA team, but one still surpassed by the recent Celtics sale of $6.1 billion, as well as a deal for the Los Angeles Lakers for $10 billion. Paul Allen's will directed his teams be sold and the proceeds be sent to philanthropic causes. Dundon already has extensive experience through ownership of a small market sports franchise with the NHL's Hurricanes. He said, quote, I'm not patient. The fact that they have a team that can win right now and we can do some things to bring more fans and resources, that was an opportunity. This is a winning place. I know we can fix it. He went on to say, quote, I value winning more than I value money, end quote.
D.C. police say they will work with federal law enforcement after President Trump's takeover. The Texas State Senate passes controversial redistricting maps, and more states are volunteering to create migrant detention centers. With that story and more, Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Being the chief of police, I'm certainly the one who champions to ensure that we reduce violent crime across our city. That is why the mayor appointed me to do that job, which is why you've seen the reduction in crime across our city. This effort will only help us enhance and build upon that.
Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Chief Pamela Smith plans to work with federal officials to keep crime rates low. This comes after President Donald Trump federalized the department, claiming crime is rampant in the city. D.C.'s Attorney General Brian Schwab says Trump's move is out of touch with what's going on in the district. 850 law enforcement agents and officers were deployed across the district in a surge. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says given how many arrests were made on Monday, Trump's plan is working.
They made a total of 23 arrests, including multiple other contacts. These arrests consisted of homicide, firearms offenses, possession with intent to distribute narcotics, fare evasion, lewd acts.
But that's less than half of the arrests made on the same day in 2024 by the city's police department alone. Crime in the district rose in 2023, mirroring a national trend, but is at a 30-year low. Trump claims crime is also rampant in other major cities, but Jeff Asher, co-founder of crime data analytics firm AH Datalytics, says based on available FBI data, these problems are improving.
Los Angeles had the fewest murders since 1966 through June. New York had the fewest shootings, I think, that they've ever recorded. I was just reading an article talking about the Baltimore miracle in terms of gun violence and murder falling in Baltimore.
Meanwhile, the Texas State Senate passed a redistricting map, which could add 5 Republican seats to Congress, but the map can't take effect until the House votes on it, which Democrats in the chamber are fighting to block by not having a quorum. Texas Speaker of the House, Republican Dustin Burrow, says his Democratic colleagues are only making things worse for themselves.
If the devastation in our Hill Country communities, the Texas Constitution, and their mounting debt aren't enough to bring them back today, they should yet again be reminded this is not going away. The work is not going away, and the pressure on them will only grow.
Former Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, who lost his long-held Ohio seat in 2024, plans to run for the Senate next year. The race would likely take a national profile as Democrats try to take control of the closely divided chamber. As the Trump administration expands its crackdown on immigration, more states are stepping up to create detention facilities. Along with Florida's alligator Alcatraz, Indiana's similarly named Speedway Slammer is slated to add 1,000 beds. Border czar Tom Homan says it's a state issue as much as a national issue.
The Biden administration did the last 4 years was terrible. Millions of people in this country not properly vetted, so the states are taking interest. They care about public safety too. And I'm not saying every illegal alien is a public safety threat, but many are, and the states are taking it seriously, so I'm glad they're stepping in.
This comes as a senior district court judge issued a temporary restraining order on the 10th floor detention center at 26 Federal Plaza in New York City. It requires ICE to meet baseline human rights conditions for holding people, which reports show are lacking in many other ICE detention centers. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU's News in Depth. You'll hear more about some blue states' attempts to counter Texas gerrymandering. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, and at 8, Drinking from Puddles. Tonight's forecast calls for clear skies, with an overnight low in the mid-60s. Thursday looks like more sunshine with a daytime high near 80. However, there is rain in the forecast for Thursday night. Today in history, the over-the-top animated television series South Park premiered on August 13, 1997. The quote of the day is from South Park character newscaster Ned, who said, "If irony was made of strawberries, we'd all be drinking a lot of smoothies right now."
Alaska Native corporations and villages say it's about time they receive funding for contamination cleanup under an Environmental Protection Agency program launched in 2023. The tribal organizations will get $6.7 million to clean up asbestos tar and petroleum from local sites given back to them in 1971. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's been more than 50 years since Alaska's Native corporations and villages received land from the federal government under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA. Some of those lands were contaminated when they were distributed, but the Environmental Protection Agency has only recently started paying for cleanup of a few state sites. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Alaska Native corporations and villages began to get funding for contamination cleanup under an EPA program launched in 2023. This year, the EPA has announced more cleanup sites. Alaska will get $6.7 million from the agency to clean up sites on land owned by 3 Alaska Native corporations and villages. The sites were already contaminated with asbestos, tar, and petroleum when they were transferred to Alaska Native corporations and villages under ANCSA in 1971. Stephanie Buss, who manages Alaska's Contaminated Sites program, says it's past time to clean them up.
We're just thankful for the work that we're able to do with the federal and tribal partners to get these sites addressed and really address the human health and environmental risks that they pose.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has called the failure of the federal government to clean up ANCSA lands a, quote, shocking environmental injustice. Murkowski created the EPA's Contaminated ANCSA Lands Assistance Program in 2023. Buss says the EPA grants target 3 sites. The money will go toward cleaning up asbestos near Utqiagvik, tar in Shishmaref, and sludge in Unalakleet. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium will also get $3 million in EPA funding to support the program and help communities apply for funding. Buss says the federal government and state are identifying more sites eligible for these EPA grants.
We are aware that there are hundreds of them that were conveyed contaminated that need to be addressed.
Past state estimates have identified over 1,000 contaminated sites. According to the EPA, contamination of ANCSA lands includes arsenic, asbestos, lead, mercury, pesticides, PCBs, and petroleum products. Alaska Native corporations and villages have said the contaminations are a threat to Alaska Native subsistence activities, posing serious threats to food security, human health, culture, and Alaska Native economies. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Public health officials remain concerned about a resurgence of measles cases in the U.S. They say it's hard for people in under-resourced areas, including tribal communities, to vaccinate their children. Partners in South Dakota are responding with outreach efforts. KFF Health News reports the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board, which serves tribes in Iowa, Nebraska, and the Dakotas, is trying to get ahead of measles outbreaks with mobile vaccination clinics. The board's Megan O'Connell says vaccination data on Native Americans is imperfect, but it suggests a lower percentage of them have received measles shots than the overall population.
Most of these communities are in very rural areas, so they can face significant barriers to care that others may not. Just getting to the doctor can be a challenge.
Her team is also working with tribes that want to host vaccine clinics. Elsewhere, tribal health organizations have launched social media campaigns and are reaching out to the parents of unvaccinated children. The CDC says the highly contagious disease has seen its largest outbreak in the U.S. since 1992, with a handful of deaths this year. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
California Governor Gavin Newsom says his state will proceed with drawing new congressional maps that he believes, quote, will end the Trump presidency. Newsom posted Tuesday evening in all caps letters, mimicking Trump's characteristic and simplistic style. Newsom wrote, quote, Donald Taco Trump, as many call him, missed the deadline. California will now draw new, more beautiful maps. They will be historic as they will end the Trump presidency. Dems take back the House. Big press conference this week with powerful Dems and Gavin Newsom, your favorite governor, that will be devastating for MAGA. Thank you for your attention to this matter, GN. End quote. Newsom broke the news as Texas Republicans were redrawing congressional maps in their state in an attempt to give Trump the 5 extra Texas seats he says he deserves for winning the state in the 2024 presidential election. Newsom's post did not offer details regarding the maps or specifics on how he plans to get them approved, although he did say previously he will call upon California voters in a special election this coming November. Newsom sent a letter to Trump earlier in the week, encouraging him to tell Texas Governor Greg Abbott and other Republican governors to abandon efforts to redraw new congressional maps. Texas Democrats in the state House of Representatives fled their state in protest of those maps to redistrict. The Democrats who fled the state began to reframe their ability to preserve new maps from passing during one special legislative session as a victory. But Texas House Speaker Dustin Burrows said, once the existing special session is closed, Republicans will immediately call for a new special session on Friday. This story was informed by reporting from ABC News.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Bowhead whales, which are found amid the sea ice of the Arctic, can live for about 200 years. But bowhead whales born today may grow up in a very different ocean than their parents.
Because the Arctic is warming so fast, all of this sea ice is melting, and the potential future may be very uncertain for them.
Nick Freimuller is a PhD candidate at the Universities of Adelaide in Copenhagen. He and his colleagues use fossils and historic whaling ship records to map where bowhead whales have lived over the past 12,000 years. They found that whales have consistently been found in parts of the ocean with about 15 to 30% sea ice cover in the summer.
This pattern has been pretty remarkable. If you go back to bowhead whale fossils 10,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago, historical occurrences from whaling logbooks, they're all in the same sort of 15 to 30% sea ice on average over the summer.
But the study also found that with climate change, suitable habitat for the whales could become rarer. Freimuller says it's still unclear exactly why the whales are drawn to this particular amount of sea ice. So he says further research is needed to better understand what threats may await bowhead whales as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Last night, members of the National Guard and agents from the Drug Enforcement Administration, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security patrolled the streets of Washington, D.C. The more than 1,450 officers working, around half of them local police, made 43 arrests. This, despite the fact last year's crime rates in D.C. were the lowest in 30 years. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser urged residents and voters to, quote, protect our city, to protect our autonomy, to protect our home rule, and get to the other side of this guy and make sure we elect a Democratic House so that we have a backstop to this authoritarian push, end quote. Trump announced today that he is looking to extend the initial 30-day limit for the federal takeover of the D.C. Metropolitan Police. Trump mentioned again the possibility of having the federal government assume command of the police in other cities, including New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Baltimore, and Oakland, all blue state cities with black mayors.
After incarcerating what he believed to be too many young offenders, a California judge took a different approach to juvenile justice. Mandy Stapleford has more on the story.
Good news, good planet. It's time now for your good news for a good planet. Setting kids free. After sending way too many young offenders to jail in Salinas, California, Judge John Phillips decided to take a different approach. He founded Rancho Cielo, an intervention program offering second chances to young people facing incarceration. Starting with a handful of volunteers and support from local businesses, Phillips transformed an abandoned 100-acre youth detention facility into a state-of-the-art vocational training facility, culinary academy, and private school for at-risk youth. This comprehensive program offers education, job training, and leadership opportunities. The program prepares students for a GED or community college admission, alongside vocational opportunities ranging from automotive repair to beekeeping and more. Each year, around 220 students walk through Rancho Cielo's doors. None are forced to be there as punishment. Instead, they are referred and given a choice. Astonishingly, 85% of first-time offenders who enroll in the program don't go back to their old ways. After graduation, some even return to the campus as mentors for other troubled youth. Rancho Cielo offers a great example of how education, training, and community support can provide a powerful alternative to juvenile incarceration. It also proves that with the right opportunities, young, troubled individuals can break free from a cycle of crime and build their better future. And this is Mandy from GoodNewsGoodPlanet.com.
With a public news service update, Mike Clifford brings us information about the National Guard in D.C., Donald Trump's discussions with Ukrainian President Zelensky from earlier this morning, and more.
The public news service Wednesday afternoon update, I'm Mike Clifford. National Guard troops called on to active duty by President Donald Trump arrived at the footsteps of the Washington Monument Tuesday as part of Trump's plan to address what he insists is out-of-control crime in the nation's capital. That from ABC News. The report, an Army spokesperson said the troops were called on to help local law enforcement with logistical support, transportation, and administration duties, as well as being visible around the National Mall. And from CNN, talks between U.S. President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky taking place this morning, according to the French presidency. EU leaders are hoping to shape Trump's views before Friday's summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Alaska. Meantime, with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detentions on the rise in Washington and across the country, some farmers are speaking out against deportations and debunking common misconceptions about immigrant farm workers.
One Northwest Washington vegetable farmer who does not want to be named out of fear of retaliation says he employs about 100 undocumented workers. He says the country's farms depend on immigrant laborers.
Our whole U.S. food supply is based on people that aren't supposed to be here because we haven't provided the way to get them here. If Americans want to eat, you better find a way to get people here and keep them here because the people that work on farms are really good people.
ICE has made about 620 arrests in Washington since President Trump took office. I'm Isabel Charlet.
Funding for ICE was tripled under the Trump administration's budget reconciliation bill. And voting rights advocates in New Hampshire say a new law will make absentee voting harder for people in rural areas.
A bill signed by Governor Kelly Ayotte earlier this month requires absentee ballot requests to include proof of citizenship, age, domicile, and identity, even for those who have previously voted in the state. Olivia Zink with the nonprofit Open Democracy Action says eligible voters, including seniors and people with disabilities, will now have to make an in-person request.
If you have to go to the town clerk's office, you're no longer voting by absentee.
New Hampshire is one of just 14 states that require an excuse to vote absentee. I'm Catherine Carley.
And severe weather growing more common, the consequences of such weather can be hard for people with developmental disabilities. In Maryland, the nonprofit Bayside Community Network in Cecil County provides care for adults with developmental disabilities over the age of 50. Jessica Johnson is a grant and fundraising coordinator with Bayside.
Massive power outages, they could be very traumatic to someone who's developmentally disabled, having to pack up, move, and leave your medications, the environment that you're going to, the uncertainty, because our guys thrive in structured environments.
With a $12,000 grant from AARP Maryland, residents at Bayside were able to make their own emergency preparedness kits and learn what to do in a disaster that includes CPR and first aid classes. This is Public News Service.
On Sunday, Israel struck a tent outside a hospital in Gaza City, where journalists gathered to gain electrical and internet access, killing 6 journalists, including 4 from Al Jazeera. A statement released yesterday by UN Special Reporters Eileen Kahn and Francesca Albanese said, Anas, Al-Sharif, the killing of 4 journalists just as Israel announces its plan to take over Gaza City is no coincidence, but a deliberate attempt to silence those who would have exposed the Israel Defense Force's atrocities to the world. Israel has killed over 270 journalists in Gaza since the beginning of the genocide, more reporters than the past 7 major U.S.-involved wars combined, including World Wars I and II. On Monday, Israel targeted artillery fire on the residence of well-known journalist Mahatsem Ahmed Dalul, killing 6 women and children. Dalul managed to escape with his children. Israel has justified its killings by accusing journalists of having affiliations with Hamas. The Israeli military accused Anas Al-Sharif, one of those killed on Sunday, of being a military leader.
This week, KBOO news poet Dan Raphael stays focused and local.
I want to respect local media, but when did Willamette Week take a part-time job as the hatchet person for the Portland Business Alliance? The cover article a month ago, Better Than Red, was pure tabloid scare. The socialists are coming! Socialist is a red flag, so the writer mostly avoided the Democratic part in referring to the counselors who are members of the Democratic Socialists of America. And to trumpet that only 2,000 Portlanders belong to the DSA, so they're not representative, misses the point of how many Portlanders agree with the party's stand. Tax the rich, and help those in the lower economic rungs. Last week's non-cover article expressed outrage that the 4 DSA counselors and 2 others were communicating and working together. What kind of system is that? They're supposed to be working for the wealthy. Progressives, calling your group Peacock, short for Progressive Caucus, wasn't the best choice, inviting attacks and mockery. And Willamette Week, the 6 city councilors not in Peacock are not all centrists. Favoring the 1% is far from centrist. For poetic justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, Dave Johnson, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, Mandy Stapleford, and Mike Clifford. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You were listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nina Mayfair.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
Can the power balance of Congress be affected by a redistricting fight in just one state? How does that work, and why? I'm Lisa Loving with Community Report, Brad Friedman of The Bradcast, and David Daly of FairVote.org took a deep dive on the history of gerrymandering in Texas that illuminates the nuts and bolts of the current redistricting showdown between Democrats and Republicans. Here are Brad Friedman and David Daly.
As gerrymandering and redistricting author and expert David Daly explained last week at Washington Post, they were two of the closest congressional races in the country this past November. In Texas's 34th district between Brownsville and Corpus Christi, Democrat Vicente Gonzalez won by just more than 5,100 votes. Just to the west in the 28th district, which runs between San Antonio and the Mexican border, voters reelected Democrat Henry Cuellar by less than 5 percentage points. Democratic dreams of recapturing